Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On this episode of TFL Talking Trucks, we're doing something not many others are doing.
That's right. You guys are calling in on this episode to ask us questions, talk about the car truck industry, give us your opinions, and everything in between. So today, we talk about the Colorado, the Canyon tires. We also talk about EVs and whether or not you should buy one.
Yes, and a lot of other detailed questions about SUVs as well.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we want to give a big thank you to everyone who participated today. If you want to participate, check us out. Patreon.com/TFLCar, and we'll set up a time with you to answer your questions. A huge thank you to all of our Patreon followers that make this podcast happen.
Yeah, this is live. I mean, recorded, but live. We're talking to you on our video conference.
So that's
this
right.
Is really cool. So we're not reviewing emails. We're not reviewing other questions. We're talking to you directly.
And if you want to talk to us, it's patreon.com/TFLCar. Let's go to the first caller. So, Andre, we have the first caller on the line. Who do we have?
We have Jason from Michigan.
And Jason, what do you got for us? What questions can we answer for you?
Well, actually, Andre, I got a couple of questions for you. So I know that you own a 2023 Chevrolet Colorado Trail Boss.
That is correct.
Yes. I've been looking into getting a GMC Canyon. Originally, I wanted the Colorado Z71, but then I changed and I wanted the Canyon AT4. And I know that the Canyon AT4 comes optional with the Goodyear Wrangler Territory MT tires, which I know you have those on your Trail Boss.
Yes.
My question is, what are those tires like for just daily driving?
Yeah. So, by the way, thank you, first of all, for supporting us, for joining us on this call. Really appreciate it. And so I have about 14,000 miles on my Chevy Colorado Trail Boss. And I am using those tire, and I specifically chose it. It was an option from GM, right? So you could have a slightly less aggressive tires or a little bit more aggressive tire, and I wanted the more aggressive tire. First of all, it looks really mean, but also a great traction because we have a lot of loose dirt in Colorado and the rocks. So they're a little bit loud. Like sometimes I drive with no like stereo.
And no cruise control.
And no cruise control. Why did you have to bring it up, Tommy? And I can hear the tires once in a while on the highway. But it's not like an old school, like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, it's not like a mud terrain tire. It's not like that at all. It's just a little bit of a hum. And then with the stereo, I never notice it. So first of all, so everyday driving is great. There could be a penalty in efficiency, definitely. So I was just looking, Jason. I have a lifetime trip, so I haven't reset one of my trip meters. And lifetime, and this is a high output engine, right? So it's a 2.7 liter turbo, high output power, and I'm unfortunately at 19.
Okay.
Which is not as efficient as I hoped originally when I bought the truck. But I have to put a caveat. I tow a 6,000 pound trailer, which is my boat. In the summer, you know, few weekends at a time. And this is the second summer of my truck, right? And we've drag raced our truck for TFL and we've done eye gauntlets, you know, really hard towing tests with it. So this is my lifetime of the truck, which has been used very, very, I would say, tough life.
Now, do you think the fuel economy would be significantly better if you went with the more road-oriented tire?
I think so. And I don't know, Jason, if you heard from other people with the other tire. Have you heard anything about this?
Not really. I've done a little research into the tire a little bit, but I haven't really heard much from other people on how it drives.
Looking to ship a car or truck? Check out UShip, the sponsor of today's episode. It's an online marketplace where shippers with extra space in their trucks or bandwidth to haul your vehicle bid for the right to pick up and deliver it wherever it needs to go. Here's how it works. Go to the UShip website or app, enter your vehicle's information where it needs to go and when you want it shipped, and then sit back and relax. Quotes from multiple shippers usually come in minutes, and there's no obligation to book a shipment. You are welcome to post your vehicle and destination for a no-risk estimate of how much you need to budget for the job. UShip's protection plan covers your vehicle in case of damages or circumstances beyond your control. UShip will ship just about anything, cars, boats, motorcycles, even horses. Check them out by clicking the link below or download the app and plan your next shipment today.
So what do you do a lot of like snow driving in the wintertime in Michigan? Like what, how would you use this truck?
So I would get a fair bit of snow driving, especially I work second shift. So I get out at 11 o'clock at night. And especially after having, say, like a snowstorm, like what Michigan had maybe 2 years ago now, sometimes the roads are pretty much covered in snow and you got to drive slow. So having a tire that can handle the snow very well would be nice.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't have a lot of super good experience in the snow as far as, you know, a lot of snow experience, because this is kind of Denver, Colorado. It snows one day and it's melted the next day. So we don't have like prolonged snow where I live or in where TFL is based. Some people have contacted us and said that the Goodyear Territory MT tire is not as good in snow as some other tires. I kind of disagree because we've had a similar tread pattern and tire. Like, for example, our Ford Bronco had a Territory tire. Our TRX had a Territory tire. Now my Colorado has a Territory tire. And by the way, every manufacturer, even though the tire name is the same, they have different, slightly different, you know, composition and compounds, as you probably know, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jason, one question for you. What do you drive right now? What's your current ride?
My current daily driver is a 2014 Chevrolet Cruze.
Okay, very cool. And you're looking at upgrading to the Canyon, is that correct?
Yes.
And why make the switch? What has you interested in the Canyon?
Well, part of the reason is I want something that's kind of like the Swiss Army knife of vehicles, something that could just pretty much go anywhere and do anything. And also, I've had nothing but reliability issues with my Cruze. I've had problems where coolant leaks galore on that thing. I've had to replace a catalytic converter already on it. I've already had to replace the turbo on that car already because it's only the 1.4 liter turbocharged four cylinder. Yeah, it's not been the most reliable thing ever.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that about your Cruze.
Yeah.
I remember there was also a diesel Cruze.
Yeah, for a while there was. That's right.
But I think that sentiment that it'll do anything, right, vehicle, I think it's quite true, especially with this Canyon or Colorado, because let me just give you an example. I tow a 6,000-pound boat trailer with a midsize truck. It's very stable, very capable. I have a brake controller built in, you know, from the factory. So I feel very confident with that, with my family. I go off-road. You've seen us go off-road, right? And the tire, I would say go for the tire. I mean, you probably have like 10%, maybe more hit in fuel efficiency. And EPA rating, General Motors and EPA rate that tire separately in the ratings.
What I think you have to consider, Jason, is, and Andre, you might know this off the top of your head, do you remember what the premium is to buy that through GMC or through Chevrolet?
Oh, the tire itself?
Yeah.
It's about $495, or at least it used to be.
Right.
It's still about $495.
So here's what you have to look at, right? Do you buy the standard all-season tire and then go out to your local tire distributor and buy either that tire or a KO2 or a Falcon or whatever?
KO3 or
yeah,
their newer tires.
Yeah, right. Or is it worth getting the all-terrain from the factory? Now, I think what it boils down to is the tire is good enough to probably justify that cost. I mean, you're not going to find a set of all-terrains for $495.
No. Maybe anywhere. Two tires. You might be able to find two tires for that much.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's a decent tread block if you want to drive in the snow, if you're looking at taking it off-road at all, and you're okay with that stock tire size, right? If you were planning on lifting the truck and sticking like a 35 under it, then it makes no sense to go out and buy that option, right? But if you want to leave the truck stock, if you want to just cruise around in it, take it off-road, drive it through the snow, I think it's definitely worth it. And which trim are you looking at, Jason? Are you looking at like an AT4, an AT4X, something like that?
The AT4 trim, yes.
AT4. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a middle ground because AT4X, you know, price goes up and then AEV price goes up again. So,
well, originally I was looking, when I was looking at the Colorado, I was looking at the Z71 trim. I wanted a little more features with my truck, but there's just some things I just don't like about the Colorado. I just feel like the interior is let down a little too much in the Colorado. The Canyon's interior is just so much more nicer than the Colorado, for one. Yeah. And another thing is that was really kind of a letdown is a lot of trucks. So like when the current generation of the Silverado came out, the first front end style, not the current one, it had the separate turn signal light below the sideburn daytime running light.
Uh-huh.
Now the daytime running light would turn off every time you would turn on the turn signal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same way with the Colorado, where it has a separate turn signal incandescent bulb and it turns off the DRL, which I'm just kind of like, I don't know why GM never, you know, programmed the headlights to just use the DRL as the turn signal. I don't know if it's just because of, like, for example, with you, because I know, Andre, you have the halogen lights on your truck.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, you don't have a DRL on yours, so that might be part of the reason why, but that was a little bit of a letdown. When I saw that, I was like, eh. So when I saw the Canyon, and I also saw one in the deep bronze metallic at my local dealership. As soon as I saw the sun beating on that color, I was sold on that thing.
Bam.
Yep.
I would say $495 is a heck of a deal for an all-terrain tire like this. Pretty aggressive, very capable. Also, I have 14,000 miles on my truck, and the tire almost looks new still. You know, sometimes when you buy a tire off the shelf, you know, in a brand new vehicle, it has a shorter life, right? You know, 20,000 or so, 30,000 miles, and you have to change tires. After 14,000 pretty hard miles, like I said, we off-roaded it, we towed with it, we drag raced it. It seems like our TRX, remember our TRX had pretty good life in those tires?
Mm-hmm.
And our Bronco also had pretty good life in those tires. So I would say, I think it's probably worth, even though you're losing a little bit of efficiency probably with that tire, I think it's probably a good deal, and I think you should go for it.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, white, or black seedless grapes for $1.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, sweet, Jason, anything else you got for us while we got you on the line?
Yeah. Going back on, so keeping on with the Colorado, what are some of like the driving quirks like? Is there anything that you've noticed that, you know, maybe if someone else is buying it, like a friend of yours is buying it, you might want to like let them know that, hey, I've noticed this, just keep your eye out for it or whatever?
The headlight switch in the digital screen. So it's usually not a big deal. So if it's an automatic mode, right, it works automatically. As soon as you get a cloud or darkness, it turns on all the lamps for you. And when it gets bright, it turns it off. When I tow, I usually like to have my headlights on, you know, so I can see my trailer lights as well. And then I forget to turn them off when I exit the vehicle.
Okay.
So if you're like me, it's a little bit something to get used to, right? Because you have to have accessories on so that the center screen is on, and then you have to click that little digital button to select the lights at the very top of that screen. Driving-wise, so you haven't driven my truck, have you, Tommy?
No, but I've driven a bunch of other, like the 84X, and I've driven some of the Bison stuff, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think about the engine response? Because it does have a lot of torque. So
yes, that is definitely one of my questions, because the one thing with my Cruise that I deal with is, especially on the really hot days with the AC running, there's like no turbo boost between, you know, like idle and 4,000 RPM. After 4,000, you get all the power right there. So you really have to wring out that engine to get any progress out of it. So I was wondering if that's the same case with your Colorado at all.
No, it's not. No, and Roman recently drove my truck. We were filming about a month ago, and he commented, this was May, like late May, early June. It was pretty warm. And he commented how quick it was. And I think, I mean, GM did a good job with this engine. We interviewed the chief engineer of the powertrain. I mean, I think there's always lots of torque. If you're a little bit aggressive, you could spin those rear tires pretty much any time. Of course, the traction control will step in and, you know, everything will kind of control itself. But there is no problem with the engine.
What I will say about the engine, Jason, which I think is kind of interesting, is we're seeing this trend a lot now, and especially the midsize class, where you used to have a bunch of engine options, usually like a four-cylinder based truck and then the V6. And then, of course, you know, GM had the diesel option for a while. But what we're seeing a lot more of, and it's not only a Chevrolet GMC thing, but the same engine with different tunes, right? Where you'll have a low output, a medium output, and a high output.
Or now, at least two outputs.
Yeah. Or depending on the truck, you might have two. Now, Andre actually went ahead and upgraded his truck through the dealer from the lower output to the higher output.
Right, exactly.
Right? And that was simply just a software flash that you pay money for, and they do that. But depending on the trim, you can also buy that from the factory. Now, I've driven a couple of different variations, Andre, and I'd like to get your opinion. There doesn't seem to be that big of a real-world difference between the power outputs on the same engine.
Yeah, and so I had the mid-grade, like you said, and then I upgraded it. And actually, for 2024, they discontinued the mid-grade.
Okay.
and I think partially because there wasn't a huge difference between them.
Right.
The mid-grade and the high output. So now every Canyon, for example, is a high output.
Right.
So if you wanted a little bit lower output, you'd have to get a work truck Colorado. That's the only way to get the slightly less expensive engine and also less powerful engine.
Because that's the L2R, I think it is, the very detuned. It's like makes 230 something horsepower.
Yeah. And I've driven it once, I think, in California, and even at sea level, it felt a little bit underpowered. I mean, for a truck, for a pickup truck engine. But we live at elevation. I mean, your elevation is lower than ours. You're in Michigan, right?
So about, 650 feet above sea level.
So it'll be pretty spunky. It'll be really quick, and I don't think you'll have to wait until 4,000
to actually
get any power out of it. So I think it drives pretty good. Sometimes you hear the turbo, like a wastegate, cool sound. I don't think the engine has a kind of a macho sound in general. I mean, it's a four-cylinder. So if you're expecting, a rumble of a V8, don't expect it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't expecting that. I knew what I was getting into when I looked at this powertrain. But I've watched the video where you were talking with the chief engineer of that powertrain, and honestly, it is a very trick motor.
Yeah, it's got cylinder deactivation.
With four cylinders? What are you deactivating down to one?
To two.
Two.
You're going from four to two. And in the screen, I think it's the trip meter fuel efficiency screen. You can kind of maximize it, bring it to the foreground in the center console screen. And it'll show you the, what is it? It's called the DFM, dynamic fuel management.
Okay.
That's what the cylinder deactivation is called. But Jason, I don't see it very often.
Like
And
I was gonna say, I think those beefier tires probably don't really help you out with that fuel economy for that reason.
yeah, because like I even like there's a way where you can coast just right, you know, like where you're going about 45 miles an hour on a side highway or a road. And if you're coasting, sometimes you'll see that symbol come up, like it's like an eco-like, almost eco-light, but it's called cylinder deactivation, DFM, and I see it almost never. And I think it's probably the rolling resistance of that tire, and because the truck is slightly lifted, right? And all canyons are about the same height as my truck. That's probably another reason why the efficiency is going down a little bit.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, sweet Jason, thank you so much.
Anything else?
No, that really should be it.
I
Oh, did you ever get to the back? I'm gonna kind of
oh.
have a jab at you for a second because I know Tommy already did. Did you ever fix your backup camera?
Yes, it's fixed.
All
It's
right.
fixed now. Yeah, so the problem was, and the dealership had, I guess, a little bit issue diagnosing it because they thought it was the camera or the console. It was actually the video wire, the data wire that was
Oh.
connecting the camera to the console. And it was, I think, there's several lengths. I mean, there's a light, there's a cable that's going from the camera down below the truck.
Okay.
There's a little piece, and then a longer piece connecting from the back of the truck to the front of the truck, and then another little piece that goes up into the cabin. It was the longest piece that had an issue.
Really?
So, but it was replaced under warranty, and it's working flawlessly for the last month or two.
That's a great question, though, Jason, because Andre had no backup camera
For a while.
for a long time.
And you could say, you know, back in my day, we never had backup cameras.
No, yeah, I've had vehicles without backup cameras, but I know nowadays it's required on all brand new vehicles to have a backup camera.
Yeah, it is required. Actually, 2015, I believe, is the year
Yeah, it's been required for a while now.
that it's been required. And also, the truck is tall, right? The truck is pretty tall, so it's really kind of helpful for your vision. And I don't know if you're AT4, if you're going to get 360 cameras. I don't have a 360 camera, like, you know, side cameras in the front.
Or cruise control.
Well, yes, thank you. I don't have many things, but I did pay only 41,000 for mine.
Andre, the $19 a month Leaf that the Boulder Nissan has or Aurora Nissan has, that has cruise control.
Ouch.
Another jab for you, buddy.
Yes.
I gotta keep you honest.
But Jason, my powertrain, you know, a lot of people are skeptical about the 8-speed, right? The 8-speed has never had a hiccup in the last year, what, in 3 months.
Because yours is the second generation of the 8-speed, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the latest gen. Yeah, so it's
Yeah,
not.
so I think they fixed the issue that caused all that lurching and whatever the first gen 8-speed was having.
Yeah,
Great
so
point.
the transmission is, I have no complaints about the powertrain or the transmission. I know some people still have concerns with that. I don't anymore. And yeah, I had a couple of different problems. You know, my truck went, during a software update, it drained its battery all the way. There was a little bug. They fixed that bug. Now, I don't know how many times I've been software updated, but I've never had a problem since. So yeah, it's pretty solid now.
It's funny, like we were talking about the backup cameras earlier, is so the backup camera has been mandatory since 2015,
Yes.
but I almost feel like now we need to have a standard as to like video quality because they're all over the board,
Yeah,
right?
some are potatoes,
Yeah,
and some are
yeah.
not.
No, it's crazy. Like I was just driving this and it kind of like it also depends on manufacturer, not even the vehicle. Like a lot of the German manufacturers have a really crisp backup camera. Some of the American stuff, like I find like a lot of the Stellantis stuff works really well in the daytime and then just turns into fuzz at night. But I'm driving this car right now, this Vietnamese car called the VinFast, and when you stick that backup camera on, it's like being transported to 1993. Do you
Really?
remember like those little like round webcams that people would like stick on
Yes.
their old thick screen computers?
Yes.
That is what this backup camera is. It's almost worse than useless because yeah, the latency is so bad. I mean, we almost need like a company or the government to come in and be like, guys, you can't have a 140p backup camera.
There has to be some limit or
Like a
some
dog in that
standard.
backup camera could be a horse, a donkey, or a rhino. So
Wow.
we need to have a standard.
It's really one thing where, yeah, it's either a cheap camera. I mean, here's the thing. I was looking at it because the Canyon I'm looking for is going to come with the HD surround vision. I do want to have that on my Canyon. But when you go into the section where you can look down the side of the truck, when you look down the side of the back, it's actually pretty grainy.
Yeah.
Partly because they just zoom the image in.
Yes.
Because there's no actual lens zoom on those cameras. It's just the actual, like if you were to just increase the size of your page on Google or whatever.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and also, yeah, there should be a standard about that.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's safety related, right?
I agree. Yeah, completely. Yeah, we need something.
At least for the backup camera, yes.
For sure.
Well, Jason, we really appreciate you coming on our podcast today and being one of the first folks, and we really appreciate your Patreon support. Thank you so much. Offline, if you want to send us a note, we'll get your address and we'll send you some swag for your help today.
I appreciate it, Jason.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, dude. We appreciate it. And good luck with your purchase.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a good decision. Like 84 with that MT tire. I think that's going to be a good choice.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
All right, Andre. So we are live on the air with a caller. And Josh, can I have you introduce yourself? Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from Saginaw, Michigan.
Very nice. And Josh, what brings you in today? What can we talk about?
I was curious about some kind of things holding back EV adoption. And so one of the things, I know cost gets mentioned a lot, and I know there's some folks who just regardless aren't going to purchase an EV just for other reasons. But in my mind, it has a lot to do with some of the vehicles that are offered right now don't kind of fit what folks are looking for. So like where I'm at, there's lots of half-ton trucks, there's lots of Tahoes, Suburbans, you know, that kind of stuff. And I know other than like the Rivian R1S, the R1T is not really a half-ton truck, in my opinion. So there doesn't seem to be something that folks could say, oh, yeah, I could use that for kind of the type of vehicle I'm looking for. And so I was kind of curious, maybe, one, why aren't some of those types of vehicles maybe being developed yet? Or do you kind of think that that has anything to do with it? Or am I maybe way off base in my thinking?
No, I think you're kind of spot on. And I think it has to do with some of the new companies that came in on the market, right? You mentioned Rivian, for example. There's also Lucid. There's also some others. Tesla started with more expensive vehicles too, right? And I think it's not just pickup trucks and larger CVs, but also the price, right? Yeah. Because the fancier something is, the more higher performance something is, the more costly it is. And I think we're starting to see a shift. For example, Kia EV9, a large three-row electric SUV, right? It's also a little bit pricey. It starts at, what, about $60,000, goes to about $70,000, $75,000. But it's approaching that Tahoe-like, right, the big SUV segment. And also small, affordable cars, right, Tommy?
Yeah. No, Josh, I think you bring up a really interesting point. And I think what the manufacturers would tell you is the cars that they are developing are the segments that they would say people are buying. So the reason that it seems like every new EV that hits the market is a midsize or small crossover is because the RAV4 and the CR-V and the Equinox sell in such high numbers. So that's why Model Y is in that class and the Nissan Ariya and the Kia EV6 and that kind of thing. And now, to your point, Josh, we're starting to see that expansion into like the larger SUVs and also into some of even the larger SUVs. Like we think that
more pickup trucks.
Yes, yeah. Suburban EVs around the corner and Escalade IQ. And then that you bring up a good point too, Josh, which is that pickup market. So obviously Ford was fairly early on with like the Lightning in the full size category. And now we're seeing Silverado EV as well as Sierra. The challenge with those categories is that EV technology doesn't easily fit into the consumer base and what they require for and, like the full size
and that
trucks.
Lifestyle too.
Yeah. So obviously like towing is a big concern with electric vehicles and certainly the full size truck category, that is a big emphasis for a lot of buyers is, hey, I need to tow my boat a long distance. This EV is not going to do it, which is why I'm really excited, Josh, about vehicles like that new Ram Charger, right? That kind of have a combination of an extended range electrical architecture as well as a backup gasoline generator that allow you to extend those trips if you are, going further distances.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that because Ram was saying their REV all-electric pickup is coming later this year, at the end of this year, and then their Ram Charger is coming early or maybe first half of next year. But I think they need to accelerate as much as possible their timeline because this is going to be interesting if people are going to welcome those vehicles, right? I think the Ram Charger is going to be maybe most welcome.
Sure.
Because once again, the beauty of a pickup truck is a do-everything attitude, right? It can haul stuff. It can tow a trailer. It can go off-road maybe in a limited fashion, right? It can go on the road trip. It can do all these things. Can take you to the store to buy, supplies for your house. And do all of that with range, right? I think Ram Charger has a really good potential here.
And Josh, where do you stand on the matter? Are you excited about electrification? Are you skeptical? What where do you stand on it?
I love it personally. So I last year bought a Mustang Mach-E.
Okay.
And so far my experience has been pretty good. I think the only thing I would do differently is probably go, I got this the standard range or the standard battery. I probably would have went with the extended range. Just to get a little bit more range out of it. But overall, it's been a really good experience. I think a lot of my initial concerns or stuff like that is it was a mentality switch of thinking that you needed to go kind of refill it in the kind of like the gas station type mentality versus a good 95% of the time I plug in at home when I get home, or we even have a charger at work and I use that. I don't really use the DC fast charging network that much.
How long did it take for you to kind of reprogram your brain and understand some of the differences with living with an electric car?
I think some of that was, unfortunately, after I purchased it, then it was kind of the force kind of getting used to it, which I think is probably too big of a burden for other folks. I'm more on the early adopter scale of technology stuff anyway, so that wasn't a big thing for me. And so the more kind of repeated realizing, oh yeah, I just plug it in most of the time, or think of it almost as charging your phone at night, that was stuff that I kind of learned or kind of rethought that through by actually doing it.
So now that you've lived with the car, do you think you would go back to an internal combustion engine? I mean, is this car meeting all of your needs?
It meets almost all my needs. The only thing I would think that it doesn't is if I needed to like haul a small trailer or something like that. That's probably the last missing piece of functionality that I can't do with what I currently have. And so I did put like a deposit down on the R2 thinking that, because I think that has a little bit of a towing angle. I mean, I don't need it. It's not a boat or anything like that. So it'd be just a small utility trailer, if anything. That's really the last checkbox for me.
Yeah.
I don't remember how much a Mach-E can tow or how much it's rated for.
It's probably not a ton, Andre.
Or maybe it's a literal ton.
I think it's odd. I don't, and maybe it's because of like the regulation. So like in Europe, it's 1500 pounds, but it's rated, it doesn't have a tow rating in the United States. They say that you can't tow with it.
It must be regulations or maybe... Yeah, it must be regulations related. I was just recently in Germany on a trip with ZF, which is a supplier, component supplier for a lot of different vehicles. And I saw some sedans towing
right.
In Germany. It's just a different mentality, different regulations, different type of life. And the streets are narrower, the distances are shorter. over there. So kind of a different world.
So Josh, where you're at in Michigan, what is kind of your friends, your family, folks you run into, what are their mentalities on EV? Do you find that people are pretty willing to consider moving to EVs, or do you find a lot of opposition against them?
It's a lot of opposition, basically. So, I mean, really, and it could be just the area that I'm located in, kind of in the Michigan area. You don't see, not that you don't see a lot of Toyotas or other stuff, but it's primarily GM or Ford and then some Dodge. And typically, like, if I just think of my neighborhood, it's almost like the community vehicle is the Tahoe. That once that redesigned Tahoe, it's like I can't see anything but those things around. And so it's a lot of those types of vehicles. And so thinking about some of the opposition being like, you can't just go on a dealer lot to get some of the ones that could meet their needs. So like the Rivian, you have to go outside of our state unless you find a used one, because they can't sell internally in the state of Michigan. And so I wonder if there's some barriers around some of those too, because I know like if I have some friends that had Teslas, they had to go like to Ohio or Illinois to pick those up.
Wow. Super interesting. No, Josh, you bring up a really interesting point. And I think that your experience and your ability to purchase these cars is going to be very dependent on the area you live in. That's a really interesting thing that we don't often talk about. And I think part of that is because Colorado is very forward thinking when it comes to electrification, right? So we've got a Tesla store here. We've got plenty of access to Rivian.
We have a Rivian store.
Yeah.
A Lucid store.
Yes, that's right. And I think there's an even deeper thread to what you bring up, Josh, which we don't talk about often. And that's the fact that a lot of, I shouldn't say every, but from what I've encountered, a good portion of salesmen and dealer folks are not on board with electrification yet. And what you end up with is, if you are on the fence about going to an EV and you go to your typical Ford dealer, your typical GM dealer, not only is it a big sell to spend in some cases $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 more for the equivalent Blazer EV versus the standard gasoline Blazer, for example.
Right.
But then you have a salesperson that may not understand the benefits or some of the downsides of an EV, right?
Or maybe the Blazer EV is not available on the lot.
Yeah, right. Or maybe they don't stock them. Maybe that dealer has decided, like we see this in Colorado, some of the Ford dealers here, they will not simply stock Mach-Es like you're saying, Josh. Because their consumer base is primarily been buying F-150s for the last 35 years.
Yeah, and Expeditions.
And they don't see the need to stock a Mach-E. That's a
But really you could
good
order
point.
One.
Yeah,
you could walk in and order one.
But if I'm just a typical person like my mom, and I don't know, like I just want a new car, you know, I'm looking at a crossover, and I go to our local Ford dealer and they don't have any Mach-Es and you know, that's they it. Do have Escapes and Explorers and you know those cars, that's familiar to them. They are kind of unfamiliar with the EV thing. You're going to end up with an Explorer. That's a really good point, Josh.
It didn't. I think that went away, if I remember reading right. But wasn't Ford at one point with almost making their electric vehicle segment almost like a standalone company, so they could do it outside of a dealer network like Tesla or Rivian? Or am I mistaken? I'm trying to remember.
Right on the money. No, exactly right. And for a long time, Ford had really strict requirements from a dealer level if those dealers wanted to sell EVs. Like there was a certain amount of infrastructure they had to install. There was a certain look to the dealership that they had to comply with. And some of these EV chargers, you know, on the low end, like what we have at our house, it could be a couple $1,000, you know, for a post and to run the 240 volts. But if these manufacturers all of a sudden start requiring DC fast chargers, I mean, that could be a $50,000, $70,000, $100,000 install for somebody, right, to run three phase.
It's a big investment, yeah.
Right.
For a dealership, at a dealership level. And I don't know where that stands right now as far as, you know, if those requirements are still very strict for dealerships and GM and, you know, Ram and Stellantis and others. But that's an interesting point.
And I know Ford, like Josh brought up, has backed down on a lot of those requirements. They did have a program. I think it was called like the Model E program or something where, you know, in order to sell the newest crop of Ford EVs. So Josh, being in an area where it's not as prevalent to drive an electric car, like if you have a friend or a family member who is anti-EV, and I'm sure you do encounter this, or neighbor or whatever, do you try to convince them of the merits, or do you just kind of ignore it and move on and just keep driving your Mach-E?
I guess you can kind of tell by the person, right, if they're really open to even chatting about it openly, or just, you know how some people, there's almost like the political viewpoint, and so you're not going to change the minds of those people. Typically what I'll say is, if folks seem genuinely interested to chat about it, is that I think there's a perception that some folks think that everyone needs to drive an electric vehicle or no one. And to me, it fits my use case perfectly. And so then I explain it that way. And so I think when you explain it to people that if it's my use case, but may not work for others, they're kind of open to at least understanding it more or seeing how it works for me. I think there's, and maybe, I don't know if it's just my area or if it's a general thing, but there seems to sometimes be like it's being pushed upon people. And I think they kind of stand off from that.
No, I think you're right. I mean, the real shame of this technology has been the politicization of it, right? And we always say we do cars and trucks, not politics, but everybody we talk to on the street sees it as a political agenda. And part of that is because it has been so brought in that sphere, not only with environmental impact, but credits and taxation and that kind of thing.
Totally.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I came across a similar experience. I was at this parade with our Cybertruck last week, the 4th of July parade.
Right.
And I was in an area that I would say EV adoption is very low. And politically, they
kind
probably wouldn't be on that side with EVs, right? And it's looked upon as, once again, being a political statement driving an EV. And this lady came up to me and started talking to me about the Cybertruck. And she was very anti-EV. She's like, you know, I do a drive out east. It's a 15-hour drive. My husband and I don't stop. We don't like to stop. I'm like, well, sounds like an electric car is not for you.
No.
But then she went on and on about these very limited use cases where an EV doesn't make sense. And she's like, it's impossible to road trip. I'm like, well, that's, you know, that's an objectively false claim. Like, we have road tripped, as Andre knows, from California to Florida nonstop.
Twice.
Right. Without stopping, only to charge. And it's been fine. Yes, it's longer. Yes, it might be a little bit of an inconvenience. But there's these arguments that are just completely wrong. But what the craziest part about this is at the end of the conversation, she said she was on the board for the regional power company, electrical power company. So she is one of the folks in charge. And I'm like, listen, regardless of where you stand on EVs, this would be
good for your business.
This would be like working for Chevron and hating gasoline, right? Yes. So I really think it's interesting that, and Josh, I think you're right, where I'm finding less and less openness to have like an honest conversation about electric vehicles these days.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's going the other way. I kind of thought that the opposite would happen, where as they became more popular, people would want to talk to their neighbors and to their friends and figure out like, is this technology better for my lifestyle or does it not make sense? Because I'm with you, Josh. I mean, for my wife's lifestyle, for example, she drives 50 miles to and from work, and that's all she does. And we are fortunate where we paid the $700 to have an outlet installed at our house. She can plug it in, and then that's it. And for that use case, like,
yes,
it doesn't make Perfect. Sense for her to go out and lease a gas car, right, where she's going to be going to the gas station twice a week, and she's going to be doing oil changes every 5,000 miles. For that, it makes sense. If you are doing road trips constantly and towing across country, screw EVs. It doesn't make sense. But I think that's a great point too, Josh, that look, it's about how you use a vehicle. I just wish that people were more open to having a conversation about, screw the politics, is this technology a better solution for me or for my wife or for whoever?
And I think for, I don't have a percentage, but I think for a good group of folks that they would work for a larger percentage of folks that would then are even open to it, right? I think there's just some of that. They just either they don't know what they don't know or they just have other feelings. But I think the use case form works for a good portion of people.
No, I think that's a good point. And, you know, coming back to what Andre was saying earlier, a big reason I think folks are anti-EV is because of the association with the added cost of buying electric upfront, right?
Yeah. It exists right now.
Yeah, it does exist. I mean, there is definitely an added cost to buying the electric alternative. Which, you know, you can make the argument is offset long term more or less. But we really do need to start seeing more vehicles realistically obtained in like the $25,000 to $35,000 territory for, I think, folks. And I'm not talking about like some Leaf that goes 73 miles and has to be recharged every 19 minutes, but like a usable range. And the Bolt was pretty much there.
Yeah, and then it was discontinued.
Yes. And then like, so we were shopping for her. We've been looking around for EVs and like the Chevy Blazer or Equinox EV, right? Yeah. That should be that car that answers that question, because on paper, it's a $40,000 car, plus you get that $7,500 back if you apply, right? So that could be mid-30s. But to Josh's point, realistically, I have not seen a single Equinox EV on a lot for under $48,000.
They're all like 48 or 50,000.
Yeah, they're spec to the moon.
Yes.
Right? So then all of a sudden, that's a car that's completely off our list because we just can't afford it. And to Josh's point earlier, that's one step back for my wife considering electric because she's like, what the heck, Tommy? I thought you said that these cars are 32,500 out the door. I'm like, that car doesn't exist on the dealer lot apparently because dealers aren't speccing them.
You have to order it somehow.
Doesn't exist. Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking too when I heard about the Equinox that I thought that would, thinking long term, that when they actually put on the lot the ones that are more modestly equipped, maybe not the lowest end, but maybe towards the middle, mm-hmm. that would be something that could start to make a difference because of how many of those types of SUVs are around and being a modest price. It seemed like a win. But obviously, to your point, that's the ones that are around here. I mean, I don't even think some of them are all wheel drive. They're a front wheel drive and they're in the upper 40s.
Yeah, it's a big problem, yeah, right? Yeah. No.
And I would say, so Josh, you mentioned you're an early adopter in general, right? So you love technology. And I think there's a good portion of population who's like this. I am kind of like this. You know, I was one of the first, I bought the first iPhone when it came out in 2007, stuff like that. Right. I think partially why some people are pushing against it is because some governments said there's going to be a ban. Eventually, you know, it's coming in 8 or 10 years or something like that. It's going to be a ban on gasoline. So that scares some people. Also, the price disparity, right? Like you said, initial cost of buying an electric vehicle is higher than not, than an internal combustion vehicle. So that's turning some people off. But I think we're almost on the cusp. Like if I look to next year of 2025, a calendar year, I'm seeing... for example, like Kia EV3, small hatchback that's going to be electric, that's going to be a little bit more affordable. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a lot of electric vehicles were targeting high horsepower numbers or really high voltage systems, really fancy tech. Like Rivian is pushing that boundary.
Yeah, right? Or Lucid, right?
Or Lucid. But then we can slow down a little bit, right? We don't have to have high voltages. You know, maybe 400 volt system is a little bit more affordable and better in a lot of cases, like Equinox EV, right?
Sure.
And also having more choices, like Ford is talking about a small electric pickup.
Sure.
Right? They called it T3, I believe. This kind of quote-unquote project T3 or an affordable EV project that they're going to roll out maybe in 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. So if we're here a year from now, Josh, or maybe 15 or 18 months from now, I think we will see a little bit more choice and also a little bit more affordable vehicles available, I would say.
Because I saw Ford, it's in Europe, though. They just announced a new one today. Is it the Ford Capri? And then I think they've got an Explorer over there, too. Is there like a reason why some of those are in the Europe region versus coming to the U.S.? Because it seems like that Explorer, almost like the Equinox, it's a little bit larger, but it seems like that would be a home run because that would kind of fit that some of the in-betweens, but it may get more towards a vehicle that people actually want.
No, that's a great question. So that Explorer EV is a really interesting story.
Did you see that?
I did. Yeah, I actually saw it in the UK. And what Josh is talking about is it's kind of like a small-ish electric SUV that is sold in Europe, not sold in the US, even though it's called an Explorer. What it is, which is really interesting, is it's based on a Volkswagen. So it's... so Ford and Volkswagen did this partnership, and it's largely, and I'm sure Ford Europe will send me an email, but it's largely based on like a rebodied ID4 is kind of what that vehicle is.
Yeah.
So some of that could be contracts, right?
Well, also Ford is giving some Ford Ranger technology to Volkswagen for the Amarok.
Right.
So, they're trading.
Yeah.
They're trading technology.
So some of it could be contracts, like Volkswagen's like, hey, you can't sell that here in the States because it's just an ID4. Some of it could be battery sourcing and production, obviously, right? There's a huge,
because some penalties for that.
There's a big advantage now for EVs producing, or these companies producing EVs here. And then part of it's just like the European mindset on how vehicles are used, I think, Josh, is very different. And I think in a lot of European countries, right, they're much more open to EV adoption because in 4 hours in Michigan, you can drive north or south and still be in the same state, right? Yeah. 4 hours in a lot of European countries and you've just crossed through...
Three countries.
Six countries.
Oh, I didn't think about that, yeah.
Yeah, so like distances are smaller, and then they're more incentivized even than they are here in the US. And the distances are smaller and the cars are smaller, and they just make more sense for the cities, even though I think a lot of those European cars would make sense here.
No, definitely.
Sweet, Josh. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate your question, and thanks for tuning in. This has been a ton of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. And Josh, Patreon, send us your address, and we'll send you some swag.
As a thank
you. Oh, nice. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Josh. Have a great day.
Michael, thanks for joining us. And you were the third caller, but I think the most important caller today.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on. It's a pleasure.
Michael, where are you from?
I'm from Bennett, Colorado, just east of Denver.
Oh, we should have had you in the studio. Just local, another Colorado local. Okay. And Michael, what are we talking about today?
Well, I had a couple of questions. One of them is I'm relatively new to the diesel space, and I hear a lot with these new engines with emission systems and, you know, the DPF and everything, carbon buildup, especially with these low sulfur fuels. And I had an experience. I've got a new, it's not a truck, it's a diesel tractor. But I already have had to replace an EGR valve because it was all clogged up. So I started thinking about these fuel treatments that you put in them, you know, and I was wondering, you hear a lot of things being snake oil and it's hard to know what to believe or anything. So since you guys have got experience with diesel engines, I was just wondering, you know, have you had experience with them? Do they work? What are their benefits? And if you found one that works well, what do you recommend?
That's a great question, Michael. Thank you. And can I ask how old your tractor is or was?
How old is your diesel engine?
I've had it a year, so it's got a DPF on it and EGR. The only thing I don't have to put in it is depth, thank goodness. But yeah.
So that's interesting. So you had an EGR kind of clogging issue after about a year. Do you use it like constantly? Do you use it all the time?
I've got about 100 hours on it in the past year.
Okay, well, that's a decent amount.
Yeah. So we haven't done like official, I would say, not official, but like lengthy comparisons of diesel additives or engine treatments, right? We mostly deal with brand new stuff. As you may know, off camera, you told me you've been watching TFL for a few years. As you know, I used to own an older Duramax diesel. I had a Chevy Duramax. Here in the office, we have several diesel engines. For example, Case owns an older Cummins, second gen. We have Alex with a newer Cummins, and we have a new Cummins as well. In our Cummins, we have a 2022, right? We have a Ram. We haven't used any additives. So no fuel additives, no oil additives, nothing like that. And I got to say, I don't know, I don't know if we're just lucky, but we've had no powertrain issues. So the DEF system has been working pretty well. I know Alex had one issue with his DEF system and his newer Cummins as well. He had to clean the DEF injector in his exhaust system. But I had some experience from other people. So like I can't say that we're the experts in diesel additives, but I've heard really good things about Seafoam. I interviewed a gentleman in New Mexico who had an older Powerstroke, and he swore he uses it for work. You know, he had 500,000 miles on his diesel, and he said he could hear the difference, you know, the lubrication qualities of some additives, right? And he could hear the difference and can feel a little bit more power in his older diesel engines and making them running a little bit better. So I do believe that it's not snake oil, right? A lot of these products are actually do a lot of the things that they say they do. It's just that we haven't compared them officially. We haven't tested many of them.
Well, and I think that would be a really good thing for us to do, Michael, is actually dive into it. I'm a little more skeptical on a lot of the additives, especially in the newer diesel engines, because they are so computer-based and rely so heavily on sensors. And these manufacturers now manufacture these engines and design these engines to within such a tight tolerance that I'm a little hesitant as to what would happen to a DPF or a DEF system with an unknown substance that the engineers didn't plan on in the system.
Exactly. So, yeah, and I want to follow up on that comment, Michael, just a little bit from Tommy. When I talked about, you know, Case uses it
Case uses some additives in his comments. His comments is 30 years old, right? And I think there's a little bit more benefits, at least what I've seen, with older designs, older engines.
Right.
Like the gentleman I spoke with, he had an older Power Stroke. Like Alex and we don't use additives in our trucks.
Yeah.
And I think it has to do, yes, the engines are becoming more sophisticated. Also, for example, in Colorado, as you know, our fuel mixtures differ season by season, right? So the fueling station actually, you know, the diesel you get or the gasoline you get in the winter, in the middle of winter, slightly different composition than we get here in the summer, right? Because we have, you know, below freezing temperatures in the winter and 100 degrees Fahrenheit today, yeah. Right, in the summer. So, yeah, so I think there could be limited benefits for brand new engines. I'm really surprised that your newer tractor had an issue or after a short period of time had an issue like that.
Well, and Andre, I'm not convinced that if Michael was running an additive in that tractor, it would make that big of a difference because you have kind of the fueling side of the tractor and then you have the exhaust side of the tractor, right? And a lot of those exhaust gas systems are on the exhaust side, obviously.
Well, EGR is recirculating the gas.
So I'm not sure, like, if an additive would have made that tractor run cleaner and then maybe had an impact from that standpoint. I'm not convinced. But, I mean, Michael, to your point, like, it's a pretty modern tractor, you said, right? Like, you got it last year?
Yeah, it's a 2023, so it's got all the emissions on it and everything, turbocharged and everything, so.
Right.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, I think what you're finding is what a lot of folks are finding with these complicated, more modern equipment, right? There's just more to go wrong.
And also, it may depend on the fuel itself, right? I mean, depending if it's agricultural diesel, you know, if it's over the road, you know, highway diesel, like, you know, for regular highway vehicles. I'm not familiar with agricultural fuels, you know, as much, just personally because we haven't tested it, but it kind of depends on many different things. So yeah, I think I would say for older engine designs, I think there is some benefit. We haven't really seen a lot of, we haven't done testing on newer engines.
Yeah. Now, Michael, I see here, we got some notes that you have a Ram that you've got some concerns with or some problems with. Do you want to talk us through what's going on with that?
Yeah, I've got a 2022 Ram 2500 with a 6.4 Hemi. Absolutely love the truck. It does everything really well. It's the perfect thing for us for hauling and towing and everything like that. Plenty of power, but I've had one issue at 15,000 miles. I brought it into our local dealer and because it was making a pretty loud tick. Hmm. They pulled it apart and found that the cam and lifters were, you know, it's the ones for the displacement on demand, those sets of lifters, they were bad and wore the cam down. Oops. So they replaced that. And of course, I'm very diligent on my oil changes. I do them max every 5,000 miles. I use the recommended oil. I've always been that way as far as maintenance. But we took a trip down to Florida and on the way back, it started doing it again. Hmm. So I'm hoping it's an exhaust manifold leak and not another cam and lifter, because I know they've had some issues on some of the early Hemis. But when I brought it into the dealer the first time, he was so surprised that I had an issue with it, because he said on the late model Hemis, the current, they just haven't seen it like they did on the older 5.7s. But it looks like here I am again. And I always send my oil out for analysis. They haven't found any metal in the oil. They said I've got plenty of, you know, life left to them. And they did the same thing. They pulled this sensor out and they say, if there's metal in that, you're talking an engine. They didn't find any metal at all, but yet it wore out the rollers. And I'm surprised in 20,000 miles, I could be looking at another set of cam and lifters on this engine. And I'm just wondering what you guys are hearing, what people are saying, what people's experience are. I think I've got an isolated case, but I thought I'd throw it at you guys, see what you had to say.
I'm very surprised too. We used to do some older auction videos at the dealer auctions, mm-hmm. and we've seen some older 5.7s. You may have seen some of those videos. And I saw a couple of older 5.7 Hemis, and you could hear the tick.
Yeah,
right?
Terrible. Yeah.
And those were trucks with like 120,000 miles, 110,000 miles, maybe sometimes more. And so those were also 10-year-old trucks, right, or a little bit older. I haven't heard anything with a 6.4 this way or this early. You know, this is still super early for this particular issue. Obviously, I hope it was under warranty. I mean, they took care of you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was all done under warranty.
Yeah. So, but I hope it doesn't come back like you're saying.
Yeah.
I haven't heard this.
And Michael, I think this would be a good question, actually. And we may look into this for doing a full-length video. And we can ask our RAM contacts. I can pretty much predict what they're going to say, which is, well, we can't give you an exact number of trucks that has this, but it's a limited problem. So, I mean, the problem with talking to our RAM sources is they're never going to tell you the full story about a vehicle problem like this. But I think it would be worth investigating, reaching out to some more viewers, talking to some dealers, and seeing on the ground how many 6.4s are affected. But Michael, you bring up a good point. Like, from what we've seen, the vast majority of them are going to be 10, 15-year-old 5.7s. And even like at the auction, there'd be a lot of HD 2500s with lifter tick. And 9 times out of 10, they were going to be the 5.7s. Maybe one time I saw a 6.4 with 250,000 miles that was making some weird noises. But it was always the smaller engines.
Yeah. And also, if you're were you towing or were you running empty?
Well, it was a combination. We were on a trip for about a month. And really towing on pretty level ground. So I really wasn't pushing it, you know, heading down to Florida and back. But it's still doing it now. And I've got to make another appointment to get it in and get it looked at. I'm hoping, knock on wood, they'll say, I will put another engine in it because maybe I've got an issue with that particular engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And since you're not super far from us, let's stay on kind of maybe connected on this.
Stay in touch. Yeah. So when they replaced the cam in the first time around, did they keep the same bottom end of the engine? Is that what I understand? So the bottom half of the engine was the same. They just kind of worked on the valve train. Is that what they did? You know?
Yeah. The service tech, he's the one that told me that they pull this little valve oil control valve out. That's the first thing they check.
Okay.
And if there's metal particulates in the oil control valve, they say, that's it. You're talking an engine. But if there isn't, then they just will replace the cam and lifters.
Interesting.
And that's what they did.
When they did that fix the problem initially?
Yes, it seemed to. I didn't notice it because it seems to vary. It kind of comes and goes depending on what we're doing and how much I'm paying attention, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Of course, if you have music playing or you're talking, I mean, they're. So I remember I drove a Power Wagon 6.4 liter truck, 6 or 7 years ago from Detroit to Denver. This was the previous transmission, you know, the 6-speed versus the newer 8-speed that they have in there now.
Yeah.
And I remember I was running just empty. It was a brand new truck. And I remember, you know, because it has that multi-displacement system, right? So if you're not pushing the engine, it will shut down 4 of its cylinders and it's trying to give you more efficiency, right? And I remember noticing a little bit change in tone of the exhaust, right, or change in the engine, just sound, because that system was working. You know, we never had an issue like you're having, but I'm wondering, because you're towing, that system should not be working over time, right? Because you're asking for power, right? You're pulling a trailer, so it shouldn't be coming in and out so often. So I'm also kind of curious about this because you're actually using a truck, you know, with a camping trailer, right?
Yeah. No, I Michael, it's a really good concern, and I definitely keep us in the loop as to what goes on. We'll stay in touch when you bring your truck back. We'd like to hear what's going on with it because 20,000 miles. Do you like the truck otherwise? Has it been pretty good to you?
It's been fantastic. I've watched your Dude, I Love My Truck, and I'm saying, boy, that could be me because this is my first Ram. I've owned Fords for many, many years and never even so much as pulled a valve cover off of them, you know? Yeah. And then this is my first Ram. And I'm not going to knock the truck because it's comfortable. It tows, it hauls, it's great in snow. It does everything I need it to do. And I highly recommend it. So if we could just get beyond this issue, it would be wonderful.
Yeah. So as many as the, you know, these, I'm going to make an excuse for the manufacturers.
Okay.
As many trucks as they make, right? F-Series sells, you know, 700,000 a year. Ram sells 500,000 trucks a year, et cetera, et cetera. I think we could pick any truck, any pickup, and there could be a weird engine case.
Yeah.
For example, I've talked to several F-150 owners with cam phaser issues. Mm. Something similar. Not exactly what's happening here because they don't have multi-displacement systems
sure.
in some of those EcoBoosts. You could talk to GM people about their transmission problems.
Yeah.
That we've experienced as well, you know, here in the office. So there's always, there could be this, you know, several edge cases well, with almost anything.
We hope that they get it sorted. And Michael, last question for you. Why did you end up switching from Ford's for a long time into a new brand?
Well, we were at the point we needed to get another truck. It was during COVID.
Okay.
And at the time, I started looking at Super Duties because I love them. But all the dealers were marking them up. And the ones they had were really loaded. And I found a tradesman that had a few options in it that was just set up the way I liked it. And they were willing to talk price with me. So I got the color, I got the options, everything. And the minute we took it for a ride, we were sold. And they said, hey, let's go with this. But I think it had a lot to do with the attitudes at the time of some of the dealers.
Yeah. Yes.
The Ram dealers seem to be a little bit more willing to work with you than the Ford dealers were. So that's what kind of drove me to try it out.
And, you know, that's such a good point you bring up, Michael, that Andre, I think sometimes I forget, like, you can talk about the differences and slice and dice these trucks as much as you want. But at the end of the day, if a dealer is not willing to work with you, or
that's it.
Yeah, that I mean, I'm experiencing this now, right? I'm looking for a new car for my wife. And like, sure, one car might be a little bit better than the other. But if that one dealer is not willing to play ball with you, the new cars have gotten so competitive. Well, you'd be like, well, looks like we're going Nissan versus Kia or Toyota versus Ford or whatever it may be, right? That's a really good point. Yeah.
Are you saying that our eye gauntlets and 0-60
useless, Andre,
and drag races are all useless?
We should be reviewing dealers, not trucks. No, but there's some truth in that. You're right.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thank you so much for jumping on this call. And what we'll do is send us your address on Patreon, and we'll be sure to send you out some swag as a big thank you for being part of this show. It's been a ton of fun.
Well, I appreciate it. I love being on, and I thank you for giving me a shot, and I'll keep you in the loop on what happens with this Ram. By the way,
yep.
I got to do a quick shout out to Johnson's Auto Plaza. You guys have used them,
yeah.
And I brought mine in for service there, and I didn't buy it there, but they treated me like I did, and that's where I'm going back. So, you know, I've had very good experience with them, so thank you for that.
Yeah, we're glad.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we've been working with those guys for several years.
Yeah, we're not sponsored in any way by them, but like we've been kind of like you. Like they've just treated us better than any other dealership. Even when before we told them who we were, they just like seem to have a high quality service. So I'm glad that they're doing good for you.
And partially they're like locally owned.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
Sweet, Michael. Well, thank you so much. It was great meeting you, and we appreciate you chatting.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you as well. Take care.
So, Andre, we have some other questions from Patreon followers that I want to talk about.
Okay.
The first question is from Elizabeth Hopkins. Elizabeth, thank you for being a Patreon member. Elizabeth asks, I am looking for an SUV that accommodates my brother who is 6'5" and needs legroom.
Whoa.
It must be high enough for my mother to get into it from her 3-wheel walker. The walker folds and must fit in the back without any problems. My price range is $27,000 to $38,000. I've looked online at the Forester, the Equinox, and the Trax. A friend of mine has a 2022 Equinox and loves it. It must fit in my garage of my townhouse. What do you recommend?
Well, 6'5". Okay, that's a pretty tall dude. I'm 6'3", and you're pretty tall as well, Tommy.
Yep.
You know, a lot of these mid-size crossovers or compact to mid-size crossovers, I actually fit pretty good in, especially something like a Ford Bronco Sport has tons of headroom and also tons of legroom.
So, Elizabeth, what you have here are actually a couple of different sized SUVs. So the Forester and the Equinox are in that RAV4 CR-V segment.
Mm-hmm.
The Trax is actually a little bit smaller.
Subcompact.
Yeah, so that's going to be a little bit smaller. Now, Andre, what should she be looking at in that price range? What do you think is the right call for her?
Whoa. Well, I do like the Bronco Sport. So you didn't mention it on this list, but maybe take a look. As far as your mom getting in and out of it easier, all of these are a little bit higher off the ground.
Yes.
Right. So across the board, maybe not the Trax because the Trax is only 2-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
But most other ones are a little bit higher off the ground. So that seat level is
more convenient, right? So you don't have to either get down too far or climb up a ladder to get into. So that's always nice.
Bronco Sports, too, that can be found with some pretty decent deals on them.
Yeah, so there's a lot of them on lots right now.
Local Ford dealer has a deal going on. $26,000-$27,000 out the door, before taxes, of course, for a Bronco Sport. Four-wheel drive, three-cylinder turbo. It's a great car.
Yeah, we don't test a lot of Subarus, so I can't comment on Forester very much.
Now, the next two are interesting. So Equinox and Trax. Equinox was recently refreshed.
For 2025.
Yes.
And it's coming like any month now.
Yes.
Soon.
What I will say about the Equinox, not a bad vehicle. It's a little pricey for the equipment that you get. So, for example, Toyota, I think, has the most bang for buck when it comes to driver assistance. So if you want adaptive cruise control, lane centering, blind spot monitoring, every Toyota is going to have that. And I think that the build quality is a little higher on something like a RAV4 versus an Equinox. Same thing with a CR-V, right? It's just going to be a slightly higher quality product in my mind. Now, the wild card in here, Andre...
Is the price.
Is the price and the Trax.
Yeah, Trax is a huge deal.
So Trax is a little smaller than the yes. Equinox. Still sits up fairly tall, and I would bring your mom's walker to the dealer just to make sure it fits okay. Trax is... actually probably the best car I drove last year because it's...
And it's also $22,000.
Yeah. So you were saving...
For the starter.
You're saving a lot of money based on your price point, and the amount of kind of tech equipment you get in that vehicle is nuts.
Yeah. And yeah, that's a huge deal.
Four-wheel drive only though. So if you need all-wheel drive, not a good choice.
Right. There was a Trax in my neighborhood recently. I think they look attractive. And price cannot be beat. I mean, really good price.
Yeah. So Andre, of the smallish crossovers, what do you think Elizabeth should buy?
I think still Equinox, if you can get it under 38.
Okay.
I mean, you have to really pay attention to that, right?
Sure.
To the price. Or like I said, maybe something like a Ford. But I wouldn't exclude, you know, Honda or Toyota in this. I think there's a lot of value. Or even like Kia. I mean, the Kia Sportage has also been redesigned recently.
Yep, good car.
So you can take a look at the Sportage if you like kind of that angular design, which is, I think, very attractive.
So for me, I think if you want something a little bigger, I would look into RAV4, RAV4 Hybrid as well. Excellent car. Like I said, really good driver assistance technology, and you can get them. Granted, it's going to be a more entry-level version, but for low to mid $30,000 area. Now, if you don't need all-wheel drive and the Trax is big enough, buy that 100%. For the value, there's nothing better. That is easily at the top of my list. I really, really like the Trax, so definitely check that out, Elizabeth. But thank you for the question, Elizabeth. Okay. I hope that helped you a little bit. Gary asks,
yes.
I'd still like to know if GM is able / will update the 8-second expiring camera in my case in the 2022 2500 HD when driving over 15 miles an hour or whatever it is. The 2024 Plus models let them stay on. It seems like a software thing.
You're right, Gary. It is a software thing, but I'm not confident at all that they would update that.
Okay.
So you're right. The newer vehicles, 2024s and beyond, there's some different regulations or different technologies. It really has to do with regulation, right? How distracted can the driver be or not be? And they used to consider those backup cameras in your central screen a distraction. Hmm. That's why they would cancel after about 8 seconds or something. And now there's some different regulations. Sometimes they put a message. So they would leave a camera view on, but there'll be a little message in the center of it. Just say something like, pay attention. So regulations change, but unfortunately, I've never seen them go backwards, you know, and get older vehicles updated for that.
It's interesting. Yeah, and, you know, we're starting to see that change a little bit across the industry now that a lot more vehicles can do over-the-air updates. Mm-hmm. Sometimes previous model years are updated, but 2022...
But I think that heavy-duty is not ready for over-the-air.
I would be very surprised if you could convince someone to update that to the newest software. So unfortunately, Gary, I think you may be out of luck.
Yeah, with that particular feature. But I wish, I mean, if you can, us talking about it here, and maybe you can contact the corporate office at General Motors, and if there's enough voice, you know, if we have enough comments, they might do it. But at this time, I don't think it's happening.
So Don Megahan asks, with EV adoption becoming so politicized, where do you see the industry in 5 to 10 years? Do you think mandates or incentives will have to be leveraged to reach heavy over 50% adoption in the next 5 to 7 years? What have manufacturers off the record or on told you where they think the EV landscape will be 5 to 10 years from now?
Off the record, Don? Well, we can't really talk about off the record.
And unfortunately, they never talked to us off the record.
Yes,
so
they almost never do.
There's no information we're withholding here.
Right. We usually kind of discuss everything that we know. So 5 to 10 years, this is Don's question.
Yeah.
I still see a huge mix of powertrains from 5 to 10 years from now. And this is coming from Toyota. This is coming from suppliers like Magna, ZF, Bosch. So I recently was at the ZF event. They talked about hydrogen fuel cells, burning hydrogen, internal combustion. They talked about hybrids in big trucks. They talked about internal combustion, diesels. So since component manufacturers like ZF or ZF and others are preparing for a variety of powertrains, I think you will still see a variety of powertrains in your pickup truck or your SUV or car. Mm. Toyota is a big proponent of choice, right? And yep, many others are as well. Many others are going back to some internal combustion development because they like would cancel it, and now they're coming back. So I see a lot of mix. I don't think we'll see over 50% electric adoption in 5 years. There's no way.
No, I don't think we're going to see that either, Andre. I think you're right. And I think we've even seen that some of these mandates have been kind of scaled back a little bit too, depending on country and state and whatever. You know, it's interesting though, like these companies don't tell us a lot about future product on or off the record. They just don't talk about it. And we ask and ask and ask, and it's kind of like a running joke. We're like, no, we can't tell you. But it's interesting seeing, like, hindsight, BMW 10 years ago was like, we're going electric. Everything's electric. i3, yes. i8, boom, boom. This is the future. And then there was a huge reversal, and there was no electric cars for a period of years.
Until, like, recently.
That BMW made.
Yes.
And then now, recently, they're just trying to, like, sneak them back into the lineup a little bit.
And they're redesigned. Because manufacturers take sometimes a long time for the next generation to come out.
Years, right?
Because they have to talk about, you know, they have to worry about safety, regulations, comfort, all those things.
Well, it just takes so long to develop a car. I mean, these companies now are developing not 2027 model year cars. We're talking like 2030 model year cars are what are currently on the engineering tables right now, and sometimes 2035. So they are looking way far down the road.
Yeah, because they have to line up suppliers. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world, you know, where vehicles should be made or not made, right? So, yeah, I think we'll see a gradual change. I don't think it's going to be a very, very aggressive change. But there will be various choices for us to come.
Having said that, I don't think we're going to see a lot of further development on internal combustion technology. I think we're right at the high watermark.
I think it's amazing already.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
our combustion engines are amazing right now.
They're incredible, yeah. So I think we're going to see new vehicles launch with existing gasoline and diesel engines. We may see some tweaks here and there, and we're certainly going to see a lot more electric and hybridization options. GM is investing in a new small block V8, which is awesome. Really excited about that. But apart from that, I mean, Coyote V8, if that makes it another 5 years, I'd be very surprised if 5-liter V8 makes it.
Ram just discontinued their Hemi V8.
Yes. So certainly I think certain cylinder configurations are going to be, you know, naturally aspirated anything, to be honest with you, is looking pretty grim. So those are going to be out, I think, Andre. And then we're going to see a lot of new technology coming in. But no, I mean, I think, Andre, you're spot on the money. We're not going to get 50% adoption in 5 to 7 years.
That's not going to happen. No.
Well, folks, we got one more question for you from a caller in, and let's cut to that right now. Sweet.
Okay.
You want to close it up, Andre?
Yes. Wow, this has been one of our longest episodes and also one of the most fun, I think.
Yeah, we had a great time, and a big thank you to everyone from patreon.com/TFLcar that called in, and thank you all for your support. You guys make this podcast happen.
Really appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Maybe with different topics. Just stay tuned.
And if you want more of these episodes, be sure to drop me a comment below. If you want less of them, Also drop us a comment below.
And oldtfl.com, right?
You got it.
Is behind us. You can see all the latest stuff because we have 8 channels. A lot of news happens every single week. So if you want kind of to see a high-level look at what's happening, just go to oldtfl.com and you can drill into different stories from there.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.